that makes the biggest difference, especially in agency cultures where everyone's just moving so fast and it's just like boom, boom, boom all the time. And maybe most of the interactions you have with people are request-based and action-based. If you feel like you're just a vending machine of actions, you are going to have horrible self-worth and you're going to feel very unseen.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is Danielle Foto, and she is the founder of Momentum Marketing. So that was a lot. That was a good alliteration. You should have M&Ms for your company like giveaway. That would be really cool.
That's not a bad idea.
I'm brainstorming as we go. So Danielle helps stuck agency owners solve the cobbler's kids who have no shoes riddle. Danielle helps creative and marketing agency owners get their life back by putting into place a repeatable business development system. Like, that's gold. And that allows the owner to achieve their desired outcomes, such as getting more clients, more cash, while building a resilient agency, all without placing all of the work on the owner's shoulders alone. That is utopia. When not supporting agencies to build those repeatable business systems, you'll probably find her tending to her garden or riding roller coasters. But you can't do both at once. But welcome to the show, Danielle.
If I could take my plants on a roller coaster with me, that would be amazing. But they would get torn to shreds.
They would, but maybe you could get it just on the first like downhill and get that. Get a photo of it, like, you know, when they have the little pictures, and then it'd just be you and like a ficus or something would be.
Maybe I'll get a fake one.
Yes. Or just like a succulent. And you're just like, yay.
And there then, you go. Yep. But not a cactus. Not a cactus. That would be really dangerous.
That could be, especially if you're at the front and it flings back and it's just like stuck right in somebody's head. Could be a lawsuit. So this is a
let's
avoid the lawsuits. Well, Danielle, tell me, what is on your mind?
Well, Kenny, first of all, thanks for having me on. Super excited about the focus of your podcast because we're talking about thinking. And I believe that people have an obligation to think, even though there's a lot of distractions nowadays that try to tell people you don't actually have to think. Cough, cough, AI. So I'm really excited to dig into some of these concepts of actually thinking and building your brain, because the brain is powerful. God created it that way. And so we need to leverage it. We need to build it. We need to exercise it. And we need to help other people do the same thing.
I love that. Just by the way, I mean, AI will be reading this and creating the transcript. So if you get a really ugly email from nowhere, it wasn't me, I swear. It's just the robots. But that's an interesting concept of thinking about thinking. So super meta. But you make an interesting point with people have an obligation to think. And I'm wondering if you can unpack that a little bit more.
Sure. So thinking is something entirely unique to humans. So we're not just responding to external environments. We make choices. We are able to process information and make informed decisions. Out of that, we're able to control how we respond to things as well. And all of that comes through thinking and thought processes. And the neuroplasticity of the brain enables that to, like, you can change the way you view something, the way you respond to something. And as leaders, especially within the context of agencies, where I primarily dwell, is this, there's this kind of rift sometimes between the leaders of an agency and the creatives, where the creatives are just supposed to like output all the work all the time and be creative and either do something amazing consistently every single time or burn out, basically, if they haven't got the time and space to think and create and ideate. So I think with the obligation of thinking, it comes down to more than even just self-awareness. It's a desire to grow and change and observe and leverage everything that you're picking mm-hmm. up on for better things moving forward.
Yeah, that's really good. Something you just said I want to hit on is that rift between agency leadership and then the creatives who are typically charged with delivering on what was sold, right? And so in my experience in agency land, it did feel like a gulf a lot of times between what each side was saying to the other, and trying to bridge those two things was difficult. And some of that difficulty may come from pressures or false expectations from the client. But there's the notion of being creative on demand that, while I think has maybe originated with good intent, because if you think about it, I sold a thing and now I've got to be creative with that thing, as opposed to, let me just muse a bit and see what comes to me, instead of there's a particular request with a particular deadline. And I believe that the owners and leadership will feel that, because there's financial implications. And so thinking, just holding space to think, can seem like an unproductive use of time. That's my experience, but what have you seen as sort of the prevailing wisdom or way of thinking in the agencies you work with?
Definitely have seen everything that you described, where usually even if someone has the self-awareness to say like, no, like I need to strategize, mm-hmm. I need to plan, those are both functions of thinking. Even if they will block out that time in their calendar, mm-hmm. it's the first thing that goes mm-hmm. if they feel overwhelmed by a client deadline. It disappears. And people don't hold that time sacred like they should, because they feel the pressure of the urgency rather than the important things of thinking and being able to step out of the day-to-day a little bit more. Also, having as an agency leader specifically, when you're balancing cash flows and the need for deadlines to be met with creatives and creativity and the creative mm-hmm. process, having to find a solution that works in both realms can be tricky, especially depending on what type of creative you're selling and delivering to clients. So sometimes it's a matter of making sure that you have enough resources on deck so that there's always a creative channel that can be funneled into, even if one particular person is experiencing burnout or just isn't quite picking it up for the specific mm-hmm. client. You can even build in more like workshop style sessions with clients so that it's not like a back and forth of a tennis ball, but it's more so a collaborative mm-hmm. effort, so that there's more alignment and less stress and concern on both sides. So there's some ways to get around that too, but I see a lot of challenge coming from just the need to be less project-based and be more retainer-based mm-hmm. as well. And when you do that, which is very important for agencies so that you have sustainable right. and forecastable cash mm-hmm. flows, you are going to run into situations where you're going to have to switch out creatives working on the project sometime mm-hmm. because creative burnout is a thing and you need new ideas. And so you have to create those systems and processes within your agency too.
Absolutely. And I'm curious then, because you bring up a great point about project-based. You can see there's a time horizon. I'm going to be creative on this thing. And then, there is an end date. When it's a retainer, and for the business leaders and the owner, like you said, predictable cash flow. I mean, that's the oxygen for your business, and you need that because people, for some reason, love receiving a steady paycheck. But what that can do is it keeps moving the finish line somewhere out into the future, which creates some uncertainty, and it makes it harder to say, well, I'm going to push this hard because I know when I'm going to get to rest. So I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about what you've brought up as creative burnout, sort of how have you defined it? And what are some of those indicators that someone may be walking towards that, either to self-diagnose if they're listening, or if they're a leader who's really trying to look after their people, could they spot it and help that person? Because it's always easier to prevent when you're headed that way than to try to help someone recover, yep. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to unpack that a little bit more and start with some of the indicators. And I'm gonna keep it mostly agency specific, but some indicators you can look for. I'm also going to assume that you're in a remote environment because most agencies are, and that's when it's harder to identify as well. And a lot of these can carry over into in-person environments, but let's focus on the virtual environments. So indicators that one of your creatives is burned out. One, a general sense that they are not responding as quickly to requests. Mm. They don't seem to be as enthusiastic in meetings. They might be a lot more withdrawn. They don't really share. Maybe their camera is on, but they seem distracted, or their camera isn't even on at all, and which may or may not be in the norm. I recommend that agencies always require their cameras be on because you need to be able to know how your people are doing. Other indicators relate to how they're interacting with people. Mm. So doing some check-ins with all employees and just hearing and making sure that everyone seems to be getting along. A lot of times burnout will lead to disgruntled behaviors and potentially attitude issues that aren't stemming from them being burnt out, not anything else. And so you have to make some of those distinctions. With the like the messaging apps, like maybe Slack that teams have, or Teamwork, or even just email in general, just take stock of what are the typical responses of people and monitor that over time. So a lot of it's observational and just having a good pulse on that. And if you, the leader, are not the direct supervisor, train the supervising managers to be able to identify those things, take stock of them. Do regular check-in meetings with each team member. You can have them write up like monthly employee, just like employee check-ins, basically, where the questions are the same every time, but it gives them a forum to write out their thoughts. So that's the other thing, too. Many times creatives are a lot more internal thinkers, and they have a harder time externally processing. Not always, but in these cases, to give them a time and a space to write it out instead of expecting them to share it with you on a meeting, like especially if they avoid confrontation, that's just not going to work. So you have to find the right avenues as well. Kenny, can you remind me of the other part of your question so I can fully answer it?
Part of it was just, how are we defining creative burnout? Because I think burnout unto itself has garnered a ton of attention over the last 3 years in particular. And it's taken on a variety of meetings, everything from like you just lost your mind on a coworker to the quiet quitting, all sorts of quiet behaviors apparently are roaming the workplace. But how are you defining creative burnout in these instances?
Yeah. So because the function of a creative is to produce deliverables, creative burnout is when they're unable to produce the deliverables required of their role. And it's not because of they're very capable of doing it. And you know that's why you hired them. Something else is causing an inability for them to deliver on the work like they need to be. And so creative burnout is one of the things that you should be looking for. It could be other reasons, but we're focusing on creative burnout. So that's how I'm defining it in this instance.
Gotcha. So it sounds like it's not delivering at all. Like you might just, that person might be wildly missing deadlines.
Or delayed, even just delays on deadlines.
That could be atypical for that individual, right? Because delays and moving dates and milestones happen all the time in agencies, but if it starts to seem apart from the norm, which does sound like agency leaders really need to get a handle on their baseline of what a team or an individual typically can produce. But it also sounds like it could be a noticeable reduction in quality. And something I'd love for you to speak to is, where do you draw the line between somebody is going to have some fluctuation. Everybody has fluctuations. You have good days, you have bad days. Yep. A bad day doesn't mean you're headed towards burnout. It may mean you have a bad day. It may mean that they're, you know, you got a fight in a fight with your kids on the way to school, and now you can't resolve that tension until right. the end of the day. And so somebody's kind of in a funk. How do you start to separate out between those normal creative fluctuations, work fluctuations, and truly headed towards that creative burnout?
Yeah. The distinction really is this a blip in time? Is it a momentary thing, or is this a trend with multiple plottable points?
Gotcha.
Per se?
So if it's sustained.
So yeah, if it's sustained, if it's on multiple clients, if it's with multiple team members, some of those indicators as well. And the question then becomes, well, how do you respond? Mm-hmm. Right? Because the typical thing to do when you're having either deliverables issues or attitude issues with an employee is to, one, have a conversation mm-hmm. about it, try to resolve it, get to the root of it. If that's not working, you can put them on a formal performance improvement plan,
sure.
PIP, and proceed from there. But a PIP is not going to solve creative burnout. And so if you're trying to use a PIP to solve creative burnout, you're just going to wind up probably having to let that employee go, and it's going to create a lot of friction, and it's just going to be very yeah. messy. So how do you actually solve for creative burnout? Well, one, a lot of agencies recognized creative burnout for what it is, and so they've implemented unlimited PTO. This doesn't always solve the problem, because depending on the culture of your mm-hmm. agency, you may or may not have people actually taking paid time off if it's yep. unlimited. And many, many times you actually don't. So you actually have to do create some structure around your pay time off and make sure that people are resting and recuperating. And if you're creatively burned out, you might not even know what to do yeah. anymore to have fun or refresh yourself. So create spaces where maybe your supervisors or a close team member mm-hmm. or set of team members are helping them brainstorm, like, well, maybe you could try this or do that, and encourage them in some of those pursuits yeah. and passions to try to rekindle that fire a little bit.
No, that's really good. I think that there's probably even more to extend that out to in terms of leveraging the community around you. And really our needs as human beings to be connected to one another. Even if you're an introvert, you know, it just may mean like your circle's a lot smaller and tighter than an extrovert's. But, I think that's a lot of wisdom of staying connected, because the impulse when you feel burnout of some kind is to withdraw within yourself, right? Like it's almost like the body, if it's one of its organs is not working quite as well, like it starts to conserve energy to keep everything else functioning. Mm-hmm. Like you do that emotionally, mentally, socially, to do that. I think one of the other pieces, I was thinking through the burnout, I just lost it. If it comes back to me, I'll say it, but a lot of what you're saying, the check-in, the questions, going back to that, is a big reason why I'm really excited about something in the work I'm doing with System and Soul. Is we've incorporated this thing called a personal roadmap. So you really get to highlight what a person's really gifted at, their superpowers, what's their craft, what are their personal and professional goals, focus. But one of the questions, amongst some others that deal with like core values, some normal things, is this idea of the six dimensions of compensation. And it's not just financial, but you include emotional, mental, you know, is it challenging, social, do I like the people I'm doing work with, spiritual, does my work have meaning, physical, do I have the margin in my life to do the things that I want to pursue outside of my work? Certainly financial is there, but that can change. That can be on a spectrum, right? Like if you're, you know, expecting a kid, or something like that, suddenly financial ratchets up, right? But let's say you're doing work in a nonprofit. Well, the financial may not be as important to you, but the emotional, social, like spiritual aspects of that may be higher. So I'm certainly a fan of that, and I think That's one tool. It's a tool. There's some others that I think are really good that people could look into to help create that baseline so they can start to notice, like, is this a blip on the radar or is it sort of continuing to trend? And I guess I should trend downwards since it's a negative experience. What can those team members really do? Like, in addition to, say, brainstorming, right? Like, that's the functional part of helping somebody through a burnout time. But in particular, in our remote companies that you've talked about, how can they be intentional to socially, emotionally support, not in a patronizing way or anything, but just be a good team member to someone that they spot that maybe is struggling? Because I think those team members are probably going to be the first ones to notice, and they're not going to have access to survey data or anything, but because they're working day in, day out, what can they do to sort of lead sideways, right? Because leadership's not a title. I mean, that's the lowest form of leadership. What can they do?
Right. So a couple of thoughts here. One, if you create a culture where coworkers and team members know, like, if you had, like, if you observe something going on with a team member and you feel like you don't have the power to do anything, tell someone who you think does have the power to do something. Right. So an example would be, oh, team member just lost their dog. It is hitting them really, really hard. Can we send them some flowers? I personally don't have a say on whether or not there's a flower budget for this person. Right. So let me reach out to this person who I think can make that call and make it happen. So those are just little things. I personally recommend, like, buy thank you cards. And if you can just ask people for their addresses at, like, a non-discreet time, then you have their addresses on hand. They have to be willing to give it to you, of course. But if they do, you can just send them random thank you cards. Like, that's a huge little thing that you can do. And I think kind of at the root of both of those very tactical day-to-day things is being willing to look outside yourself and see the other people on the team. Stop worrying about yourself and observe other people, see other people, acknowledge their existence, their struggles, their work. And that makes the biggest difference, especially in agency cultures where everyone's just moving so fast and it's just like boom, boom, boom all the time. And maybe most of the interactions you have with people are request-based and action-based. If you feel like you're just a vending machine of actions, you are going to have horrible self-worth and you're going to feel very unseen.
Yeah, I'm going to steal that vending machine of action. So I'll do my best to give you attribution when I say it. So let's take that. I think that's great at the team member level. And I think those thank you cards could probably take on more meaning, more importance, given the virtually connected manner in which a lot of these companies are structured, is to have something physically sent to you just has a different feel to it. Now let's take that from team member all the way up to the very top of the organization, right? It's one thing to, you know, have, you know, a questionnaire or something that helps you sort of keep your finger on the pulse of where people are at and if they're headed down sort of a dark path or a bad route. The best medicine is preventative medicine, right? So, like, healthy diet, exercise, being hydrated and sleeping. Those, I mean, number one, as a creative, your brain is your way that you make a living. So you need to do those things will help your brain, period. But I use that example to say, like, doing a lot of those things can help you not even get into a mode where disease could take hold. And I think burnout is sort of a disease because nobody freaking wants it. It feels like a virus. And what can companies, agencies be doing to structure in that preventative medicine? Because I don't think it's happy hours.
I don't either. I think for some cultures, happy hours do contribute, but happy hours are not good for all people. So keep that in mind too. there's two things. There's more. I'm just going to talk about two, though. One, as a leader, you can create variety. And two, you can create proximity to ideas for your creatives. So what do I mean by this? Well, on the variety front, Kenny, what would you do if you had to eat cheese tortillas every day, every meal for the rest of your life?
I'd probably end up after day one, start throwing them at people.
Right. And your body would start instinctively telling you like, oh my gosh, I need to eat a carrot and I need some variety. You know, you start to get a sense of like, I need something different. I need something different. Mm-hmm. So what happens when people feel like they need something different? Well, one, they start withdrawing and they start looking at other opportunities, right? Especially creatives. Mm. So what you can do as a leader is build in variety. Now, the type of creative that your agency does will vary the ability and the extent to which you can provide variety, but you need to build that into how you package up your services and how you have your teams collaborate to deliver on client work. So there's lots of different ways that you can do that. I don't want to prescribe a single way, but focus on the objective of create variety for your creatives. So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
Second thing, proximity to ideas, especially because the creatives are typically remote now. They are not in close proximity to just have those like trigger thoughts or random conversations to just see what other people are doing. There's a lot more isolation. They have to like, you actually have to be in a frame of mind to pursue looking into creative ideas too. So if you're already burnt out, like there's just like nothing that's going to get you there. So create proximity to ideas. And you can do this through intentional team meetings where maybe two or three people are sharing some ideas or sharing what they learned or sharing the work that they've been doing. So you can structure that in a little bit, kind of like a show and tell of sorts.
Yeah.
And you can also, depending on if you're using Slack or some other internal communication software, you can create ideas channels. And a lot of agencies do have this. So if you do have one and it's not really being used, make the effort and get that going and lead by example and start putting stuff in there and initiating conversation around things like, what do you like about this? What do you not like about that? How could we use that for client A? How could we use this for client B? When wouldn't this work? Those kinds of things. So you can create variety and you can create proximity to ideas to support your creatives.
I really like that. The show and tell thing made me think of a story. It is sort of a story, but David Cancel, who was the founder of Drift, formerly of HubSpot. Well, while he was helping run product development there, one of the things he led was having these monthly show and tells from these different teams of they could bring whatever they wanted. It could be an idea. It could actually be progress against a specified project. They come and it had to be tangible and they showed it off like, hey, here's how this thing runs. Here's how this set of landing pages or these templates or this, piece of software is going to work. And so they got to show it off. They could get some feedback. Somebody may have an idea or they just got, applause and a pat on the back. But he said it really spurred innovation as well as this sort of positive brainstorming creative culture during his time there. And that always stuck with me because finding the way to just constantly be sourcing your environment for new ideas to create. Because that's sort of, the way through is the way out, right? For burnout to some extent is the thing that is hurting you might actually be the thing that if you get that energy back, because there's a reason you're in this business. There's a reason you're doing this work instead of something else that might feel, like sitting in a tub full of scissors for you, right? Like I used to sell insurance and God help me if I ever do that again. I admire the profession. My dad does it and he's fantastic. He just kills it. He loves it. And it put a roof over my head for, while I was growing up, but it's just not something that I could do. It didn't help me express my creative side enough. So I really love that concept, which may, side hustles, people having those, I think sort of scratches that itch if they can't find it within their agency. I also think that's why you may notice in some agencies, there's that gulf between the leadership and the creatives of standardizing the deliverables. It makes it easier to sell. It makes it easier to staff. It makes it easier to predict cash flow and margins and profit and all these different things, but can feel like a tiny death for a creative who's like, okay, cool. So we're doing another 10-page website with a home about these three internal pages contact. Okay, cool.
It goes back to that vending machine of deliverables idea. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, what do you want? What inspires you? Apple's website? What's your budget? $500? No, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But I love also the proximity to ideas as well, of when can people be in those brainstorming sessions of just think through it. Something at the time of this recording, this episode has not yet been released, but he's the founder and owner of a steel manufacturing company near where I live. But he gets people internationally traveling to their shop to look at their culture. Which normally you're not thinking manufacturing as a market leader in culture, and he'll admit that. But one of the things that struck me that was interesting was that they take the first hour of the day to invest, the leadership invests in the team, share some training, some new thought, get some feedback. They also give them another half hour to just like organize, think up new things for their workspace. How could they optimize their workflow based on their proximity to the work? And then they share in a company intranet photos of, hey, I figured out how to do this and make this part go faster or easier or make it so people don't lose their fingers, you know, whatever it may be.
Right.
And
that crowdsourcing concept.
Right. So they have that channel of ideas. And they're able to do it, which I thought was just brilliant because it also shows that you can express that sort of creativity and bring that sort of energy into people, whether you're in an agency or you're in something like steel manufacturing.
Right. It's everywhere. And it's because it's relevant to any business that involves people, right? And, which is business. So
business be easy if it weren't for all these people.
Right. But it would not be nearly as fulfilling. Amen. The other thing, too, is where do ideas come from? Right. Because ideas can be sourced from a variety of places. And the extent that you've built your culture will define where the ideas come from. So are ideas only coming from the top or are they coming from all angles and actually being implemented? So I like to think of this in terms of the difference between an octopus and a puppet. So an octopus, I don't know if you know anything about the anatomy of an octopus, Kenny, but their brain is actually within their entire body. And so it's not centralized like we have our brains. And so what that allows them to do is use their entire body to observe their surroundings, respond to their environment, and preserve their life, basically, as they're surviving in the ocean. Whereas a puppet is a thing that can move and do things, but it's all being driven by the strings that are being pulled at the top. And a puppet is lifeless in the general sense of the word. Like you try to bring it to life, but like without the person at the top, it's just lifeless. Whereas an octopus, one of its tentacles could be chopped off and it would still continue to function as an octopus and it would keep on going. And so idea sourcing can be thought about in those terms too, of how do you create an octopus environment instead of a puppet environment?
Interesting. Yeah. Because if you have, there's an IT term for this, but it's like single point of failure, I think.
Yep.
And so if you're puppeting, and what happens if the puppet master, so to speak, where masters just are having an off month or something like that, it's essentially like cutting through those strings.
It is.
And now the puppet's just laying, it was already lifeless and now it's not even functional.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's it's also that so that not only sounds like a great cultural thing to do to breed creativity and life and energy, that's also like a business sustainability tactic or way of thinking, is what it sounds like.
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of not just scaling businesses, but building resilient businesses. Because there's a major difference between a business that's just growing, 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 and a business that's resilient. To bring this down into agency terms, even this applies to businesses in general, but in agency terms, you're going to have the highs, you're going to have the lows. A resilient agency is the agency that's going to be able to make it through the low points of the economy, like we're in right now, especially for agencies, and still do well enough to keep their team, have enough to not go in the red, or at least not go very far in the red, and they can make it out. They've got enough cash on hand and cash reserves to make it through, and they have enough built into their team culturally and from a biz dev perspective to keep the wheels turning. Even if deals aren't closing right now, they will close down the road because of all of that momentum. And then when they're at the high points, it just feels like they're cruising, like things are just going and it's great. Those agencies focused on resiliency, they are going to see the highs and lows, the ups and downs in their revenues over the years because they're investing in different things, which will drop things down, but it makes it so that the next peak is higher and you keep on going that way. Whereas maybe more of a we're going to sell the agency minded entrepreneur is looking for constant growth, constant growth, constant growth. You can't go down. And so they're going to make some short-term decisions that actually are to the detriment of a long-term resilient agency model. And so there's that distinction.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. I hope rewind that listener, because I think that there's some smart things that could help frame up decisions you're having to make today, tomorrow, next quarter, next year, whenever you start your annual strategy planning, incorporate that sort of thinking. So it sounds like you could capture the momentum up at the top to help bring sort of those lower places up a little bit so they have less of an impact on you, unless you chose to make a heavier investment, and then that's a self-directed sort of decrease of profit. Danielle, I feel like there's probably 37 things we could keep talking about, and it would be a blast. But as we think about creative burnout, prevent it, recover from it, normally I just ask for one first step. I want to ask you for two, because I believe in you. But what is that first step that a creative and then an agency leader, so take it from two perspectives, what's something they can do in the next 24 hours to really check in with themselves or their team as to where might they be on that agency burnout spectrum, to make sure they don't go there or they recover quickly?
My answer is going to be similar for both, especially for something that you're doing within the next 24 hours. Hone in on observing. Observation is a very powerful skill that is very easy to lose. So focus in on the observation of yourself, of your team members, of the leadership as well, and jot down those observations within the next 24 hours, and then set yourself a reminder for a month later, 6 months later to check in and document, like, were those observations true? Is this a trend that I need to be aware of and make more direct action towards a solution for? I think that's for both.
No, I love it. I think that that's wise, and the documenting I think is big. I say that as somebody who hates taking notes, so I think that that's key. Well, thank you so much for what you had to share. Now, if people want to know more about you, Momentum Marketing, your work, any of the content you're producing, where would you send them?
Sure. So you can go to my website at gettingmomentum.com, or you can also find me on LinkedIn. I am not active on any other social media, but you can definitely find me on LinkedIn.
And we'll be sure to link both of those up in the show notes. Well, Danielle, thank you so much for coming on and being a guest. I'm hoping it will not be the last time because we need to cover those other 37 things. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.